Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Right now, the Jewish power structure is very worried about Russia. In order to weaken Russia and eventually install a pro-Jewish government there, the Jewish-U.S. axis has engineered a coup d'etat in Ukraine. Russians have historically been among the most Jew-aware people on Earth. A century ago, the Imperial Russian government set many restrictions on Jewish activity there to prevent the exploitation of its citizens. When that government was overthrown and Russia was converted into the Soviet Union by the Jewish-dominated Bolsheviks in 1917, a period of overt Jewish rule took place in which millions of the best men and women in Russia were killed, imprisoned, and had their property stolen. Under communism, anti-Semitism was a capital offense. When a non-Jew, Stalin, evidently an even more vicious player of power politics than his Jewish comrades, took control, he distrusted the tribally focused Jews and proceeded to systematically reduce their power, killing quite a few of them in the process. When faced with the German invasion in 1942 and realizing that more than a few Russians and Ukrainians, Ukraine was then a part of the Soviet Union, were welcoming the Germans as liberators, Stalin ditched much of the Communist Party line and embraced Russian nationalism. As a result, the post-war Soviet Union became less and less Jewish-controlled and more under the control of Russian nationalists. Despite still paying lip service to Marxism, by the 1960s, Russian leaders were openly opposed to Zionism, and Jews, no longer favored, were queuing up by the thousands to leave the country. By the late Soviet period, we had the then premier of the USSR, Leonid Brezhnev, telling the British representative at a leadership summit, quote, "Prime Minister, the only important question facing us is, will the white race survive?" Close quote. Fast forward to the late 1980s. The fall of communism brought the Jewish oligarchs back in droves as they successfully schemed to obtain the factories, infrastructure, and natural resources of Russia for pennies on the dollar, much of which wealth they then looted and sent out of the country. This theft of the Russian people's property caused an economic collapse and widespread suffering, and a large percentage of the Russian leadership and rank and file knew exactly who was responsible. Enter Vladimir Putin. In 2000, after ousting the corrupt U.S. Jewish puppet Boris Yeltsin, Putin called a meeting between himself and the almost entirely Jewish oligarchs, the billionaires who then dominated Russia, just as other Jewish billionaires now dominate the West. As National Vanguard writer Justin Cowgill puts it, quote, "Vladimir Putin gathered the 18 most powerful businessmen in Russia for an unprecedented discussion. This was the beginning of Putin's campaign to undermine and reduce the power of a group of men who had made titanic fortunes from reforms designed to pave the way for a transformation of the Soviet planned economy into a free market economy." Russian President Vladimir Putin was rewriting the rules again. In no uncertain terms, Putin told Russia's wealthiest that the jig was up, and he denounced them as creators of a corrupt state. A very small number of people, known now as the oligarchs, were able to concentrate a very large portion of the Russian people's wealth into their hands through backroom deals and insider connections. Some who read this essay might condemn me because I point out the Jewish identity of the majority of these oligarchs. My reason for doing so is not to be unfair to Jews or to increase hostile feelings towards them. The reason is the simple fact that their Jewishness is a factor and must be taken into consideration when dealing with Russian politics. In Russia, everyone is aware of the Jewish identity of these men, and the acts of the Jewish oligarchs themselves have done quite a bit to increase anti-Jewish feelings there. The oligarchs themselves recognize this, as do many Russian Jews, who blame the oligarchs for giving Jews a bad name. In my opinion, it is much better to be honest about it than try to pretend that this factor doesn't exist. Close quote. Vladimir Putin, whatever he may believe personally, is forced by political necessity to praise the heroic Soviet soldiers who saved the motherland from Hitler. Russia has quite as many "my country is always right" patriots as does America, where the fighters in the good war, which wasn't good at all, must be praised in politically correct terms by all politicians or face political suicide. Putin, therefore, presents himself as, and may even believe himself to be, an anti-fascist, even while he pursues essentially nationalist policies, simply because those are the policies that are objectively good for Russia, even going so far as to decry the low white birth rate and implement laws designed to increase it. Though Putin speaks highly of Jews and disparagingly of anti-Semitism, though he keeps some pet Jews, with no trace of real power, in his circles, and though he has outlawed extremism as a versatile way of cementing his rule, he nevertheless has overthrown the Jewish oligarchs and taken away their power and much of their ill-gotten wealth. And in the last few years, every time the U.S.-Israeli warmongers were attempting to start another war in the Middle East, first in Iran and then in Syria, Vladimir Putin checkmated them. For these things, the Jews cannot forgive him. They are very worried about a resurgent, nuclear-armed, and Jew-aware Russia, and any alliances she may build in an increasingly Jew-aware world. So the Jewish power structure is most anxious that Russia be surrounded, its government overthrown, and a new democracy installed there. It is in pursuit of this goal that the Jews' surrogate, the regime in Washington, is welcoming Eastern European states into NATO, building missile bases there, and has now fomented a coup d'etat in Ukraine. Since late last year, the Jewish power structure, through its puppet, the United States, was trying to overthrow the legitimate elected government of Ukraine, which had taken a position of moderate and positive engagement with Russia. Hundreds of millions of U.S. taxpayer dollars were expended to recruit a group of supposedly right-wing fascist mercenaries who were carefully watched at all times by Jewish and U.S. intelligence operatives, since they were not entirely trusted. These groups were politically and philosophically descended from the Ukrainians who joined the German forces in World War II to liberate their country from communism. The understanding of the members of these groups ranged from full awareness that the Jews were responsible for the historical starvation and enslavement of Ukrainians, all the way to jingoistic petty nationalists who blamed everything on Russians. Frustrated by political impotence and long fooled by American anti-communist rhetoric, they were ripe for exploitation. These mercenaries were given weapons and other military hardware. They provided much of the muscle for the overthrow of Ukraine's president, Viktor Yanukovych, last February. As pointed out by the writer David Sims, as soon as the U.S.-backed revolution succeeded, Jews began to be appointed to top government positions all over Ukraine. The new prime minister, Arseniy Petrovich Yatsenyuk, was Jewish. When Yatsenyuk's political coalition collapsed, he stepped down, but his successor, Volodymyr Borisovich Groysman, is also a Jew, as confirmed by the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. Even a number of provinces in Ukraine suddenly acquired Jewish governors in a country that is 0.02% Jewish. That's 500 Ukrainians for each Jew. What are the mathematical chances that so many governors and two successive prime ministers would be Jews if this were not a Jewish coup? This new government in Ukraine immediately sent all of Ukraine's gold stocks to the Federal Reserve Bank in New York City, robbing the Ukrainian people of their wealth, just as the Jewish oligarchs and their puppet Yeltsin did to Russia. The revolutionary government in Ukraine then immediately made arrangements for military aid and cooperation with the regime in Washington, and took out large loans from the Jewish banking system to pay for military and other operations. The coup leaders then instituted new taxes on the Ukrainians to pay back these fictitious loans plus interest. They then flagrantly stole about half of the pension funds of the now impoverished Ukrainian people. You can be sure that soon foreign investors, read Jewish billionaires, will be allowed to establish newspapers and television networks in Ukraine and will tell the hapless Ukrainians how lucky they are to be able to go into debt and welcome millions of new immigrants from Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. Russia knows that beyond the purpose of enslaving Ukraine, this coup has a deeper purpose: to encircle and conquer Russia. In response, the citizens of mostly Russian Crimea have broken away from Ukraine and joined the Russian Federation. All over Ukraine, resistance fighters supported by Russia are battling for independence from the Jewish-led illegal government in Kiev. Ukraine has now become a stage for a racial and political drama of world-changing import. The naive nationalists in Ukraine were fooled. They were tricked into fighting the wrong enemy. They were fooled by promises of support from their real enemy, the regime in Washington. They were fooled because they were petty nationalists, not racial nationalists. I pray that some of them are racial nationalists now. They were fooled, not unlike the way their grandfathers were fooled into thinking that the Russian foot soldiers who enforced the Jews' orders to starve Ukraine were the real enemy. They didn't see the big picture. The big picture of Jewish power ranged against the freedom and self-determination of all peoples and against the very survival of our race itself. That's the reality of what's happening in Ukraine. That's the reality of what's happening all around the world today, from Cleveland to Gaza, to Stockholm to Vladivostok. The Jewish war against our freedom, against our future, and against our very existence. And showing our people that reality is our highest duty. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the reconstituted National Alliance membership organization, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free. Oh,
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth.